This is the morning brief from the Economic Times.
When Raghunandan E.G. woke up the day after he was discharged from hospital, where he'd been undergoing treatment for COVID, he found that his eyes were swollen shut and he couldn't open them. His worried wife, Vidya, rushed him to the nearest hospital in Bangalore, where they ran a few scans. But the news was not good.
After the scan only, we got to know that behind his eyes, two nerves were paralyzed. That was the immediate doctor suggested, like, you have to rush today, you have to get surgery, otherwise that will expand and it may affect any part of your brain, eyes or ear or nose.
That was Vidya, who shared her experience with me over a phone call the other day. Vidya's husband is currently recovering from two surgeries, but she is now desperately looking for liposomal amphotericin B, the antifungal medication that's critical to treating patients with black fungus or mucormycosis. Her doctors have told her that this medication is essential to her husband's recovery. Today, there are thousands of people across the country like Vidya running from pillar to post to get their hands on liposomal amphotericin B, as cases of black fungus continue to rise across the country in patients recovering from COVID. With over 9,000 cases being reported, what was once an extremely rare condition is now being called the epidemic within the pandemic. In today's episode, we'll be decoding why India is seeing so many cases of black fungus suddenly, the crippling shortage of the medication needed to treat it, and what are the signs that you need to look out for so that you can seek help well in time? I'll also be asking our expert panel about what media reports are calling white fungus and if that's something that we need to worry about. You're listening to The Morning Brief from The Economic Times and I'm Indulekha Arvind. To explain all the concerns around the black fungus outbreak, I've invited Dr. Shashank Joshi. He's an endocrinologist at Leelavati Hospital in Mumbai, a member of Maharashtra's COVID-19 task force, and the co-author of a very recent paper on mucormycosis, which analyzed 101 cases of COVID patients who had contracted the infection. He's joined by Dr. Raghuraj Hegde, an ophthalmologist in Bangalore, specializing in ophthalmic surgery, who's had to operate on quite a few patients with black fungus in the last few weeks. I've also invited my colleague Nidhi Sharma, who covers the Union Health Ministry and has been reporting on this outbreak for the Economic Times, who's joining us from New Delhi. Thank you, all of you, for being here with us on The Morning Brief. Dr. Shashank, let me come to you first. By now, laypersons like me do know some things about the black fungus, such as the fact that it's caused by exposure to a group of fungi, which is very commonly found, even in soil. But what I don't understand is, how does something that's so commonplace become a life-threatening infection? And what is the connection to COVID?
Thank you so much for having me over. And you asked me a very pertinent question. This black fungus word is a misnomer. It's basically a mold-like mucor fungus, which is commonly found in soil, but it's a very, very rare disease in human beings because you need a virulent microbe like a fungus in an environment which is conducive for its growth in a host like a human host, which is weak. And what happens in COVID are two situations. Many people with COVID get diabetes, either because the diabetes is converted into high glucose due to steroids, the COVID itself causing diabetes in people who don't have diabetes. So obviously the milieu of high diabetes or glucose with the use of steroids and sometimes a humid air, they all can be conducive environments for the growth of the fungus. And it's a micro-invasive fungus. So we have suddenly seen a mini epidemic of this fungus. If you see that even in the good old days, when we saw people with very high diabetes or glucose levels of 300, 400, and people who were admitted to the hospital with diabetic ketoacidosis, we used to occasionally see a case of mucormycosis. So diabetes is being very common in India. India is the second largest population in the world due to diabetes and the use of steroids. These two have actually become a recipe with the COVID to generate this.
But Dr. Shashank, what does your research show about why we are seeing so many cases in India this year compared to other countries? I mean, you've of course already mentioned diabetes, and your paper also said that diabetes was the most important risk factor. So is it India's high prevalence of this condition that's also fueling the surge?
So independent of diabetes also, we have seen, if you see the worldwide reportage of cases over the last 30, 40 years, India probably harbors 2/3 of this fungus. And why it harbors 2/3 of the fungus, we don't know. But probably, again, as I said, diabetes is one of the driving forces. But if you ask me why Indians have a special predilection for this mucor fungus, is something which we will find out a little more. And we are also researching the area whether COVID virus per se itself has anything to do with the growth of this fungus.
The last Saturday, I had gone to our hospital in Jhajjar and had gone in and I saw a patient there who actually had COVID and he had lost vision in one of his eyes because of the fact that the fungal infection in the sinuses had gone up to his orbit, the eyeball, and caused a loss of vision in the eye. So that can happen.
That was Dr. Randeep Guleria, head of the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, describing his recent experience with a patient of mucor mycosis in an interview. Now, Dr. Hegde, you had in fact mentioned in our conversation the other day that you've operated on 40 patients in just the last 3 weeks. And I was also reading that hospitals in Bangalore are running out of beds kept aside for patients with black fungus. As an ophthalmologist, could you tell us how black fungus affects the eye? And also, how many patients of black fungus do you see in a normal year?
So the disease actually starts in the sinuses, there are some air spaces around the eyeballs, the eye socket as such. So it starts there, and once it progresses, it can progress both towards the mouth as well as towards the eye, that is above the sinuses. So once it reaches the eye sockets, then it enters the eye and then it starts progressing into the eye. So that is when the eyesight, the movements, all those things are affected at that point of time. Usually, in a regular practice, we would see about 2 to 3 cases a year. And it's quite rare when the immune system of the patient is very low. And that is, of course, enabled by high blood sugars, which reduces the defense system of the body itself.
Okay. And could you tell us also about the patients that you've been seeing the last couple of weeks? Is it that they only realize that they have the infection too late? What is the condition in which they seek out your help?
So initially, about 3 weeks back, we were getting a lot of advanced cases where it has already reached the eye and it has already reached the mouth, and even the roof of the mouth also is involved. Because of less awareness, they have delayed, and because there was a high demand for hospital beds, they were getting from one hospital to the other without being diagnosed and presenting very late. But now, because of a little bit of awareness in the media as well, patients are presenting early, because once the infection has reached the eye sockets, it's already pretty late. It's actually considered a little advanced disease. See, because after that, once it reaches the eye, it then goes and reaches the brain also. So early presentation would actually help in getting better outcomes for these patients.
And when you say early presentation, so typically when does it kind of manifest physically? I mean, when should they kind of be coming to a doctor?
So first thing is, since it starts in the sinuses, usually they present with nasal stuffiness. So nasal stuffiness, and there is some discharge from the foul smelling discharge from the nose, as well as sometimes bleeding also. And typically they would have high blood sugars. So the monitoring of the blood sugars during their COVID illness as well as post recovery is very important. That would be one of the first screening tests for whether they have mucor mycosis or not, because not a single patient of mucor mycosis presents with normal blood sugars.
Okay. And Dr. Shashank, why does mucor mycosis have such a high fatality rate of 50%? That's in fact one of the most terrifying parts of the outbreak that we're currently seeing.
So it is an angio-invasive thing, and it will enter the orbit, it will enter the palate, it will enter the various bone plates of the sinuses. We have had cases where the palate had to be removed, the orbit had to be removed. So it is a invasive disease, and it has a potential to invade, and it's a serious disease. So once the condition starts into the invasion potential, and basically it's a vasculo-invasive disease, obviously we need to get a multidisciplinary team like Dr. Hegde, ophthalmologists, ENT surgeons, neurosurgeons, and oculoplastic surgeons who all come in the picture, and they have to handle this. And we have to simultaneously also give medicines like injectable liposomal amphotericin, which can also harm the kidney for a period of almost 3 weeks, or some other antifungal agents, which may not be very easily available. So obviously, once the disease kicks in, it's a very serious condition, and sometimes it could be life-threatening as well. And which is why the whole idea is to detect it early, prevent it if feasible and possible, and ensure that the other comorbidities which lead to it are handled appropriately so that we can try to save lives.
Very critical points that you mentioned there, Doctor.
CMS, as per the directions, we are making it a notifiable disease under the Public Health Act. So now we will know what all cases are there.
Breaking news coming in from Tamil Nadu now. The number of cases of mucormycosis in the country are only increasing, and we're given to understand that Tamil Nadu is going to soon notify the disease.
India has reported an alarming rise in cases of a deadly fungal infection. The state of Rajasthan has declared the spread of the infection an epidemic.
Nidhi, considering the rise in the number of cases that we've been seeing, you of course reported that the center has asked states to make black fungus a notifiable disease, while some states like Telangana have declared black fungus an epidemic. Now, what do these terms mean?
Indu, when you make it a notifiable disease, the main difference is that every state needs to report to the center the number of cases that are being reported of the disease, right down to the district level. So they put in place a system where every district reports the numbers to the states, and the states every day report it to the center. There is usually a national dashboard which is created. And this is really a step to understand the extent of the disease. Now, this is different from, terming a disease as an epidemic. So if you really see the WHO guidelines, there are three definitions. So you call a disease an outbreak or an epidemic, or in the case of, say, COVID-19, we've called it a pandemic. So when a large extent of people are infected by this disease, the health fraternity, the center, then tells the state as in how big is the extent of the disease. So that is when it becomes classified as, rather than outbreak, it is classified as an epidemic.
What about the fact that black fungus, unlike COVID-19, is very importantly, it's not contagious. So that does not play a role in whether to declare it an epidemic or not?
No, it does not. So it's not the infectious part of the disease that makes it. It's just the extent of the disease. So there were states that took the lead in declaring it under their Epidemics Act as an epidemic, like Rajasthan did it, followed by Telangana and then by Gujarat. So probably these states saw larger extent of the disease. So they decided that, rather than just an outbreak, it can also be classified as an epidemic. It also helps the states in ramping up their health response system and telling the district level officers that this is what we are dealing with.
Got it. Dr. Hegde, we've also, started hearing, especially in news reports, about cases of white fungus or candida, which is reportedly more dangerous. I mean, how is it different from black fungus? Is there a link to COVID, and should we be concerned about this as well?
So candida is another fungus type. It is not a very new infection. It has been seen earlier in other patients who are recovering from illness and whose immune system is compromised. The problem with mucor is that it does not give you time to treat. So it is so relentless that unless the treatment is initiated at a very quick pace, it will just progress relentlessly. But candida also is a dangerous disease to have. And what we are seeing also in the cases with mucormycosis is that they are also infected with candida. So that really points out that it's basically the immunocompromised state that is causing the infection rather than the fungal infection being more common.
And when you say quick progression, how quick are we talking about?
It can even progress in a matter of hours. So basically, even when you're admitting, you're trying to correct the metabolic parameters, their blood sugars, their electrolytes, and you're getting them to the operating table as soon as possible. But even then, it might progress in that interim period. So within a matter of hours to days, it can just progress so fast. So we have to fight the disease on two counts. One is that the patient should present early, and then that has better outcomes. And also, when the patient presents, we have to get them to the table early enough so that we can beat the disease and get ahead of the disease.
Got it. And I'm glad you brought it up because, of course, the most commonly prescribed medication seems to be amphotericin B. Nidhi, could you tell us why it seems to be in such short supply? And does the government have plans to make up for this shortfall?
Yes, so Indu, I don't think, which the doctors will also tell us, that there has never been such a huge caseload of the disease. You know, black fungus has always considered a rare kind of a phenomenon before pandemic. And even in the first wave, there were very few cases that were reported. So people even in tertiary or quaternary care hospitals would tell you that maybe in the first wave, we would get like, say, one case in a month or 2 months. Whereas right now, the doctors are getting about 8 to 10 cases every day in larger metros like Delhi and Mumbai. So right now, the government has had to ramp up the production. What it has done now is identified more pharma companies which can ramp up the production and supply. And also, we can see some imports coming so that we can treat the patients. I think the specialists also say that they have also, with the short supply, the government has taken over the supplies, and now they are going through the district hospitals, and the district hospitals have committees which sit in the morning and in the evening to decide which hospital gets how much of the amphotericin, liposomal amphotericin. At the same time, I think specialists, which our specialists would also tell us, that Dr. Joshi and Dr. Hegde, that I think when there is a short supply, they've also moved on to the second line of treatment and also the drugs that are being prescribed, hoping that these would also work fine. So that is being done.
Sure. Thanks, Nidhi. Dr. Shashank, is that what's currently happening? Doctors are moving on to another option in the absence of amphotericin.
I completely echo what Nidhi is saying, that she knows the ground realities which are happening today. And clearly, you know, liposomal amphotericin B is regulated and sometimes can be very much in short supply. So we have to triage it, use it to the most deserving patients, and also then look at alternatives which are available, like posaconazole, etc. And there are two other drugs which are available, but even they are in short supply. So it's not going to be an easy thing. The number of cases, we never anticipated these numbers to go up. I'm happy that Government of India has now allowed 5 more generic manufacturers to ramp up production of liposomal amphotericin B. You know, but liposomal amphotericin B or amphotericin can be toxic to the kidneys. And these drugs have to be given for a period of 3 to 6 weeks sometimes. So it's a long stay and long doses of medications. I think the governments, are both state and center, are mindful of the prospective shortages. They have made some rough guess estimates. And based on that, they have ramped up the production exponentially. And we are reasonably certain that the supply crunch, which is there, would be eased out in the next week. And hopefully, most patients will be able to get the drug they deserve.
Dr. Hegde, could you give us a sense about how much the treatment for black fungus is likely to cost? Is it something that's very expensive?
I'm speaking of Bangalore, but what I would say that it is a very expensive treatment. One is that it is not a simple disease to treat. It needs a multidisciplinary treatment. And so a multidisciplinary hospital is what is required. So that is where the government medical colleges and the multi-specialty hospitals are the ones who are at the forefront of treating this disease. And another point is that liposomal amphotericin is quite expensive. It is about 7,000 per vial. And one needs about anywhere between 5 to 7 vials a day. So easily the cost would go up to about 50,000 for just the medicines. The extra cost of surgery, the extra cost of the hospitalization, all that is not being counted. Just the medicines are quite expensive. In Karnataka, what they have done is they have told that the antifungal treatment will be given free of cost in the government hospitals. But I would say that since the disease load in many of the private hospitals are also very high, we have actually requested the government from all the various associations, doctor associations, to make it free for all the patients, irrespective of whether they are in private or in government hospitals. Because the treatment cost is very high. And not even the patients who are affording the private hospital will find it difficult to even fund this kind of treatment.
So far, we've heard the possible reasons black fungus cases have been rising in India, how the disease progresses, and the costs and complexities of the treatment. Stay with us as we ask the doctors how it can be prevented and what you need to watch out for if you're recovering from COVID. Dr. Shashank, could you also give us a sense of, you know, in the absence of nationwide data, which is only now being captured, what are the number of cases that doctors in Bombay, for instance, have been seeing daily now compared to, say, a year ago?
No. So it is, we started with a zero game. So, you know, we used to report maybe a case in a week, or a case in a 15 days, or a case in a month. And from there, the number has suddenly gone up to almost 10 cases a day or 8 cases a day. So obviously, if you look at the Gujarat, probably has the largest case load of around 2,000 cases plus, followed by Maharashtra, which is again around 2,000. But remember, Mumbai city per se has the locale of the cases are not predominantly from here. They are coming from other geographies. For example, from some parts of Marathwada, some parts of Vidarbha, some parts of western Maharashtra like Dhulia. That is from where these cases are being filtered out. So we definitely are seeing a rise, but we are reasonably certain that as the COVID second wave is easing out and there is more awareness, people will get diagnosed early and handle this problem early.
And speaking about awareness, could you help us understand what the common symptoms that people recovering from COVID are, that people need to watch out for, and what is the treatment protocol?
So remember, there are two types of mucormycosis. One is the sinus and the brain, which is called as a rhinocerebral, which usually will have a one-sided swelling, a little bit of a headache, a blocked nose or a nasal or a sinus congestion, black lesions or a black spots on the nasal bridge or the upper inside of the mouth, which quickly becomes severe with fever. And of course, we are not seeing much of lung mucor right now, but that can have fever, cough, chest pain and shortness of breath. What we are currently seeing in this wave is the sinus and brain mucor.
And what is the treatment protocol when detected early?
So the treatment protocol which is there is to start them on intravenous liposomal amphotericin B. It's a joint multidisciplinary treatment, as Dr. Raghuraj was telling us, that we usually involve a ENT surgeon and oral surgeon and an eye surgeon to look at the location of the lesions. Usually an MRS is preferred. We don't rely too much on the CT scanners. Localize the lesion, and then probably the lesion is debridement, which is surgical removal of the lesion.
Got it, Dr. Hegde. You've been quite vocal about the fact that, you know, the most important preventive treatment measure is diabetes control, which of course Dr. Shashank had also mentioned. But could you tell us a bit about steroid overuse and to what extent that's a factor? Because, of course, doctors have been using it heavily in the current COVID surge.
Yes, that's right. So we have been, even in ophthalmology, in many, many specialties, we have been using steroids even on the diabetic patients. But we have not come across a single case of mucormycosis in those patients. So it's not necessary that just because you have diabetes and then you've taken steroids that you will get mucormycosis. What we are seeing is that the ones who are affected by COVID, so that increases the insulin demand in the patients. So diabetics become more diabetic. That is, their blood sugars go very high and are not controlled by the standard medications that they were on before having COVID. And some were pre-diabetic. So those are becoming diabetic after COVID. So they are becoming COVID and they require more diabetic medications. And there are even cases of what we call as de novo diabetics, that they were not a known diabetic and they did not have any risk factors to become diabetic. But after COVID, they are having high blood sugars. And I think those are the ones who are the most vulnerable because they do not know that they have to keep checking their blood sugars, and they don't usually check the blood sugars once they're discharged. And many of them are very young and they have a very mild disease. So they don't go to the hospital or they're not checked for the blood sugars. And after they recover, they don't monitor their blood sugars again.
You mentioned that you've seen young patients as well. So how young are we talking about in terms of, you know, the patients coming to you with mucormycosis? What's the age of the youngest patient you've seen so far? And is there a possibility that children could also develop this condition?
So the youngest patient that I have operated on is 23 years old.
Okay.
So 23 years old, that is the youngest I have operated. But I have heard from my colleagues that some young children are also being affected. I mean, it's early to say whether the children might also get affected, but there is a possibility that many young kids who are infected with COVID can become diabetic after the COVID infection is over. Even though the lung disease comes down, there might be other metabolic diseases that can take over after the COVID recovery.
Doctor, would you also suggest that patients who've recovered from COVID should necessarily monitor their blood sugar as well, even if they have no diabetes history?
So on that point, let me be very categorical that if they have a pre-existing diabetes, they must monitor. If they don't have a pre-existing diabetes, but their sugars were high when they were admitted to the hospital, they must monitor. But if they were totally asymptomatic, they did not have any diabetes, and when you measure their glucose afterwards, it is normal, then there is no need to do it. So it is only in people, see, remember, moderate to severe disease is the one which is hospitalized. And when they often need, we call it as the fifth vital sign. So we monitor temperature, pulse, respiratory rate, blood pressure, and we add glucose to it as a fifth vital sign. Six being pulse oximeter and oxygen saturation. So these are the six signs which must be monitored during COVID in those 21 days. And if somebody has a raised glucose value during those 3 weeks, then it is mandatory to monitor them regularly in periodic intervals. But that has to be done under medical supervision for the next 3 months.
And my final question back to you, Dr. Shashank, how can people prevent black fungus? What precautions should COVID recovered patients be taking?
So three precautions: be vigilant for any, symptoms like the mucormycosis, which would be one-sided swelling, a blocked nose or some blackish discoloration inside or outside. Second thing is maintain excellent nasal, oral and throat hygiene. Thirdly, please maintain your glucoses, fasting below 100, PP below 140, 3 months average below 6.5. If needed, use insulin appropriately. And fourthly, if you are being given steroids, ensure that you have a dialogue with your doctor and keep it to the minimum level and ensure that you use the least dose of the steroids. And even if the steroids are there, ensure that you monitor your glucose appropriately. So I think it is better to be wise. And if there is a doubt, even if it's a false alarm, see the specialist. Because, if you do it early, you can treat it well. And once again, I appeal through you to everyone who's listening to all of us, is that remember that even if you have COVID, which takes acute COVID, takes 2 to 3 weeks in the acute phase, after COVID is over, between those 2 to 3 weeks for the next 3 months, please be vigilant. And please ensure that you keep your nose, throat and oral hygiene clean. And at the slightest doubt, please see a specialist.
Doctors and researchers are continuing to analyze the spread of black fungus in India and are investigating what may be the factors unique to our country that's fueling this outbreak. Meanwhile, what's uppermost in patients' minds right now is the access and affordability of treatment, most importantly, the medication liposomal amphotericin B. Vidya, who you heard in this episode, had told me that she in fact ended up losing lakhs of rupees to someone who promised to sell her the medication and then disappeared with the money. It's critical that her husband and countless others get the right treatment at the right time because, as you heard the doctors explain, the spread of black fungus can be very rapid. You're listening to The Morning Brief from The Economic Times, and I'm Indulekha Arvind. Today's episode was edited by Bhavya Dilip Kumar and coordinated by Nehal Chalyawala. Write in with your feedback to The Morning Brief at timesgroup.com and spread the word about the podcast on social media if you enjoyed it. The Morning Brief airs every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and have a great day. All the clips used in this episode belong to their respective owners. You can find the credits in the description.